Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:09 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is June 21st. I thought we'd kick off with the Hang Seng in Hong Kong. It's put in a higher reaction low, and it's approaching the region of the 200-day moving average. I've shown over almost 20 years of history here, and it's bouncing from the region of the 2015 and 16 lows, and also the region of the 2011 and 12 lows. So there's an interesting conflict here, because obviously Hong Kong is pegged to the dollar. Interest rates are rising in the USA, so that would be restricting liquidity in Hong Kong. But then, of course, we have the credit impulse in China. So that's something that's pushing higher. So it's almost now at a point where investors are, and I guess I should show that on a year-over-year basis, which is the more common way of looking at it. So on a 12-month net change basis, it's almost back in expansion territory. It's trending higher from the lower side of the range. So generally speaking, there is a clear cyclicality to the credit impulse in China. And when it's bouncing from these low levels, you generally see lows in the market. And we can think then about the low that we had in the credit impulse in 2014 and 15, and then it marched higher in 2015 and 16. So that represented a low in the stock market and generally a more benign environment. So for Chinese equities, that's also the primary reason why investors have been more willing to give the benefit of the doubt to Chinese equities recently than just about anywhere else, because of this credit impulse marching higher. It suggests that liquidity provision is becoming more serious. But there is, of course, it's not exactly simple. When we look at what's going on in the property market, then there have been significant sell-offs right across the property developers sector, but perhaps they've gone far enough, and this credit impulse is helping to support them, because we have two large upside weekly key reversals on China real estate, and that's coming from the 50-cent level, the region of the 2008 lows. And certainly we're seeing at least steadier action here. But China Central was in the news today because they're accepting wheat as a down payment for properties. So that's certainly an inventive way of drumming up demand for its housing units. And they're paying more than the government silos are. So they may even succeed in attracting some of those reserves of wheat and potentially converting that into housing, which is, I think, a very inventive way of trying to attract liquidity. But it also smells of desperation. So obviously, then we're talking about central China. There aren't any really big tier one cities there. So that's obviously also where you tend to get a lot of speculation in the latter stages of a big bull market. And China's property has gone up 3 times in the last decade. So that's a big move by any stretch of the imagination. And Chinese growth has been predicated on debt over the same amount of time. So the big question then is, how much support is the government going to give? And is liquidity going to peak again within perhaps the next 6 months? And then how quickly will it come back down? Think one of the important points is that US retailer inventories are now back at highs that we haven't seen since the 1980s. This is really problematic because China's economy is still very much attuned to the export engine. But if inventories are this high, well, it means that warehouses are full, and the retailers are going to be more interested in selling and disposing of that inventory. So we've seen these huge moves on the downside for companies like Target and Walmart and a number of the other retailers. And of course, Amazon is a company that massively invested in more data centers and more warehouses. So it's halved over the course of, well, perhaps not quite halved, but not far off it, over the course of the last year. And is still encountering resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. What I find particularly interesting is the willingness of investors to continue to wish to buy the dip, and we've definitely seen some of that coming in right now. We're not yet at a position where monetary conditions are going to get easier. The NASDAQ was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, over 2%, but wasn't quite able to hold all of the move. So if we look at the size of the gains that we've had, just about all of the main US indices were up in excess of 2%. Europe was up less, but we had a good day in Asia, where the Hang Seng was up 1.87%. The Nikkei was also stronger. So then let's just think about what was helping to drive some of this enthusiasm. So Tesla was up in a dynamic manner. Not necessarily because of a surge in sales, but because Elon Musk said they're going to shed about 10% of the workforce and that they probably hired too many salaried workers. So they're going to fire some people, and generally markets like that. But it doesn't mean that they're about to start selling more cars, and they raised the price of those cars by $6,000 last week. So these Teslas are starting to become progressively out of the reach of just ordinary people. So how one is supposed to sell a mass market car and continue to raise its price at the same time really does beg some big questions. But we definitely are seeing also some additional interest in the electric vehicle sector. But part of the reason for that is because of oil prices. Oil is steadier in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. Now, one would think that if oil prices were going to surge on the upside, then maybe electric vehicle manufacturers might be a good idea. But what happens if this steadier action that we've had here isn't going to last? I don't make any apologies for thinking that about 2 weeks ago, that pop on the upside above the initial move above 120, I was thinking was a tradable signal. If I hadn't been on holiday and teaching the chart seminar, I probably would have bought it. And I'm rather glad I didn't now, because it's looking increasingly like a failed upside break. And if we are moving into more of a contractionary environment, then the liquidity that's currently being provided by China is going to have to multiply in magnitude. We're still in an environment where bond yields are really quite steady. And there's the potential that bond yields could contract if we do move into more of a difficult economic environment. But they're rising right now. And this continues to look like not much more than a consolidation. Now, we had some exceptionally volatile action on Friday, or Thursday, I think it was, but no real follow-through on the downside. So we're still in a very delicate position, because some of the price action we've seen is looking rather dire. But we haven't seen some of these major price sequences breaking lower just yet. So copper is still in the region of the psychological $4 level. It was up in a pretty dynamic manner earlier on today and then couldn't hold it. So if we zoom out and look at that on a weekly basis, this looks like a type 2 top formation. And we have the massive reaction against the prevailing trend in a period of right-hand extension. So the $4 level absolutely needs to hold, or there's the clear potential that it's going to break on the downside. And oil prices, with that big downward dynamic last week, are also looking susceptible to additional downside. Then natural gas, with the closing down of major export facilities for the USA, then US natural gas prices are coming down rather quickly, coming from 950 to 650 in the space of about 10 sessions is a really quite significant move. So now the question is it going to be able to hold this break on the upside out of the long-term range? $6 was, generally speaking, the upper side of that base formation, and even then only in extremis. So it's coming back into a potential area of support, but that's an awfully big downward dynamic. Well, EOG Resources looked like it was going to pop on the upside, and then it came back down on consecutive days last week to test the region of the 200-day moving average, and bounced somewhat, at least, in here today. Of course, one of their problems is that they send gas directly to that plant that blew up. That's hitting infrastructure for them. It's a problematic event. But they still are one of the lower cost producers in the Midland and the, I guess, the West Texas plains. There's clear risk that we're moving into a more volatile period once more. The VIX index hasn't really popped on the upside. So we definitely, though, have a sequence of higher reaction lows. And 35 has been an area of support for markets on multiple occasions since January, but each one of those support levels have come in at successively lower levels. And there's the real potential that all we're seeing right now is a pause. The one thing that I think people do need to start paying attention to is the economic calendar. Because if we look at what's coming up over the course of the next 9 sessions, well, we're going to have GDP figures coming out in the 29th. And we don't have a survey figure right now, but we had negative GDP on an annualized basis. And the survey, so the prior was -1.5%, and the surveys were a -1.4%. There's a potential, therefore, that we could be looking at a recession right now. If the actual figure comes in even lower than -1.4%, then we have 2 consecutive quarters of negative growth. That really does point to stagflation, where inflationary pressures are still very high, and growth is moderating, and not just moderating, but contracting. So that would put pressure on commodity prices. And we've already seen that inventory levels are exceptionally high, so there's not going to be nearly as much demand. And higher interest rates are starting to do their job, and they're killing off demand in the market. So it's hard to imagine then that we're going to have a sustained rally until central banks in fact turn around and start providing liquidity once more. And when we just think about the consistency of the trend, the Nasdaq did bounce in here today, but it's closing out the day in the region of the low from back in May. And we've had a bit of dip up into the overhead trading ranges, but not a lot. So we have one range below the last. We had a breakdown last week, and so far it has failed to push back up into that overhead range. So it's tempting to think that we must be close to a low because we've had such a big pullback and we're in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And I would be really happy to see the market rebound from this level and to confirm support here. But we have to bear in mind that every time that's happened in the past has coincided with a major liquidity event where there has been a huge round of new liquidity provided to the market. Now, the one thing we know about quantitative tightening is every time it's been tried, then it has resulted in the size of the balance sheet doubling subsequently. And we're in a quantitative tightening period right now. It's only just begun. It won't really be until it's over that we see a clear liquidity signal. So that's obviously a risk here. Now, we've seen that copper is in the region of a potential area of support, and so are many stock markets. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get a continued rebound in the short term. But in order to gather the momentum necessary to really sustain an impressive rebound from here, we would need to see some evidence of liquidity, and it's just not there right now. So that suggests that we don't have to be in a hurry to buy. There are opportunities becoming available because the size of the pullback we've seen already. So some value is accruing right now, but one I think has to be rather judicious in what they are moving into. So we had a meaningful move in the biotech sector, for example, last week, and that was on M&A activity. So that has pulled back less than the wider market. It didn't go up as much as the wider market, and therefore it's not going to have as much difficulty starting to do better from here. We can also think about what led on the upside. What was the focus of that M&A activity? So Clovis Oncology rebounded very emphatically in here today, but wasn't quite able to hold all of the move. And it's a fraction of where it was a couple of years ago. But that's upside follow-through on last week's weekly key reversal. So we're seeing that at least some very oversold sectors are beginning to attract interest. And we're going to have to see a lot of reorientation of portfolios like the ARK ETFs in order to sustain new bull markets. At least this isn't an index. They do have the potential to sell out as some of the worst performers and to reorient. But that's going to take imagination. And obviously, they have a clear focus on innovation, which is interest rate sensitive. So, in order for big rallies to take place in liquidity focused markets like Bitcoin, we need to see a new source of liquidity. Now, Bitcoin was up over $1,000 at one point today, and now it's up about 360. And we had a lot of volatility over the weekend. It was down really in a dynamic manner on Saturday, recouped all of it on Sunday, was quiet yesterday, and then what looked like it was improving in here today. But this is the triumph of hope over experience writ large, because I think there's a lot of retail investors are still very much tied to the idea that this is just another little pullback and that it should be bought with both hands. And the fact that at GameStop is still steady in the region of the 200-day moving average, it just boggles the mind. This is a company that's losing money hand over fist. And they now have cash of $1 billion, but they lost $700 million last year. So one would have to think, what are they spending the money on? And it's a company that doesn't really have a business model. So obviously, they're either going to have to go to the market, or they're going to have to figure out where they're going to get more money from to keep it going, because there's just no way it's going to survive in an environment where interest rates are rising and silly money isn't being thrown at it. But the fact that it is still so firm would suggest that there's still a lot of people willing to buy the dip, and we haven't seen anything close to capitulation yet. The one thing I find particularly interesting is how easily people are willing to talk about a crash. But we haven't seen a crash. The stock market is back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Some of the larger cap companies aren't even that far down. Microsoft has pulled back, no question, and it's a major trend in consistency, but it's certainly not crashing down. So that might yet be in the future. We might yet see a capitulation event occurring. So then the question is, what happens with gold? It was down about $4 in here today. The last dynamic was on the downside. It's still holding the $1,800 area. Investors are still worried about they're worried about how committed central banks are to supporting the purchasing power of their respective currencies. And financial repression is never really far from where central banks are going to go when they run into trouble. So that would be beneficial for gold overall. But gold is not immune from acute bouts of volatility. And we're still steady in the region of the $1,800 area, and there's still a sequence of higher reaction lows. But then we can think about some of the crises in the past. So we had a sharp pullback for a while, at least in 2020, but then it rebounded very quickly. We had a very sharp pullback in 2008, and that reverted to the 1,000-day moving average. Well, on this occasion, the 1,000-day moving average really isn't all that far away. It's only about $160. So that's potentially where the downside, where the potential downside is if we get a period of panicky selling in other asset classes, where we get a contagion event and everything goes down together. I think a lot of it is going to hinge on what happens with the bond market. And of course, what happens with the bond market is going to tie very much into what happens with the dollar. And the dollar had that big downward dynamic 4 days ago, but it is steadying now. So this is still an uptrend, and we've had some softer action and a consolidation in the region of the prior peak over the course of the last week. But we're not quite out of the woods yet. When the dollar rolls over, it's likely to be a catalytically bullish event for gold, but we're just not there yet. And the Japanese yen continues to trend downwards. So the steadier action that we saw last week has been completely obviated, and it's accelerating on the downside right now. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today. I'll wish all the best to all of you.